This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Time. What is time? Where is it, and where are we in time? Is time a fixed kind of edge moving slowly forward into a mysterious, unformed future? Or is something else going on? And if something else is going on, then is that in some way connected with what I call the visitors? Because I don't think that we have any reason to say aliens or interdimensionals or anything like that. I tried to create a neutral term to replace all of those words with a neutral term when I wrote Communion. Today, we're talking to Dr. Michael Masters about these very subjects. Briefly, do what we call, most of us, aliens and UFOs have something to do with other worlds or time itself? As is true of many of our guests this spring, today's guest is going to be appearing at Contact in the Desert, May 29th to June 3, at the Renaissance Hotel in Indian Wells, California. I'll be there too. Linda Moulton Howe will be there. Dinah Walsh-Pasulka will be there. Deep Prasad, the artificial intelligence scientist who had the visitors walk into his office last November and was on Dreamland over the Christmas holiday, will be there. Loads and loads of people. It's going to be terrific. So go to contactinthedesert.com to find out more. Dr. Masters is a professor of biological anthropology at Montana Tech in Butte, Montana. He received a PhD in anthropology from The Ohio State University in 2009, where he specialized in hominin evolutionary anatomy, archaeology, and biomedicine. Collectively, Dr. Masters' background education and current research program combine to offer a unique perspective, and boy, is this ever true, and novel approach to addressing unanswered questions pertaining to a widely recognized yet poorly understood aspect of modern global culture. And folks, you know exactly where we're going now. His new book, Identified Flying Objects, a Multidisciplinary Scientific Approach to the UFO Phenomenon, challenges readers to take a new look at this whole phenomenon and to see if we can't understand it in terms not necessarily of alien contact, but of our ever-evolving understanding of time and travel through time. His website is idflyobj.com. His book is Identified Flying Objects. Mike, welcome to Dreamland.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Well, it's exciting. Let's start with your dad.
Yeah.
who sort of got you into this in a very strange way. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a rather serendipitous entry into this field of study. I just remember hearing him tell a story to some friends late at night, as most young children who don't want to go to bed, you kind of creep and listen and eavesdrop. And I heard him tell a story to some friends that were over about this UFO encounter he had. And it was the first time I'd heard of it, but it was kind of a classic close encounter with lights in the night sky. And I grew up in Northeast Ohio. He worked primarily in Amish country as a veterinarian. And he and another individual who was out with him on this farm call late at night came to the top of a hill in what's a very dark area of the state, obviously, being that the Amish don't use electricity. And this bright light was over across the horizon, and he describes it as shooting toward the truck and stopping just a couple hundred meters away very abruptly. And it sat there for a period of time and then shot back over across the horizon to where it had been, probably mutilating a cow or whatever. And then all of a sudden it shot straight up into the sky and disappeared from sight. And it obviously couldn't have been a satellite or any sort of normal light, headlights or anything, that things that just don't move that way. But what was really impactful about it, and where this really all began for me, because that was just an interesting story, but he bought a book, maybe you'd heard of it, it's called Communion.
It's been on my mind from time to time.
Okay. Well, it proved to be very impactful in my life, as it turns out, because the book was sitting up on our living room shelf, and it was facing out, whereas most books were kind of put in line with just the spine facing out. But this one, the cover was facing out. And I remember very vividly being 8 years old and looking up and seeing the cover of that book with the quintessential sort of gray alien with the big black eyes and the large head and small face, and had this mental image pop in my head of an early hominin, as I know it now, but at the time it was just sort of a chimpanzee-like creature, a modern human in the middle, and then that archetypal alien form in the right side. And it just kind of, I guess, got me thinking about whether there could be a connection, a phylogenetic link between our evolutionary past, our modern form, and what I hypothesized to be is an eight-year-old with no knowledge of human evolution, possibly just our distant descendants who are coming back through time to study us in their own evolutionary past.
No, I've had a number of instances of experiences of movement through time, so I think it's possible, but they're very strange experiences indeed. I'm going to talk about them in the third half hour with Dr. Masters. Right now, we're going to be talking about how such things could be possible, how movement into the past and from the future could actually happen. And if the visitors are our descendants, why do they look so very different from us? But first, free Dreamlanders, listen up.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff. Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on Audible.com. We're talking to Dr. Michael Masters. His new book, Identified Flying Objects, A Multidisciplinary Scientific Approach to the UFO Phenomenon. His website, idflyobj.com. That's idflyobj.com. His book, of course, is Identified Flying Objects. Now, let's talk a little bit about what time is, because it seems to me There is no, you know, we have gravity. We have other forces in the universe, the strong force, gravity, that we can identify as forces. Time is not like that. It isn't a force. Time is the way we see change with our own minds. And in other words, it's a way, it's the way we perceive what in science is called entropy, the gradual slowing down of everything. So how could you move through that?
Yeah, it was probably one of the most fascinating parts of doing this research and the part that I really enjoyed writing about. I'm obviously not a physicist, but it's also not the case that physicists have a monopoly on time. A lot of other fields, philosophy, for example, have studied time for a very long time. With that said, though, I do think that physicists have the best grasp on how to understand it. And the most dominant view among them today is this notion of block time, or what's sometimes known as landscape time. And one of my favorite ways of understanding this, I've been describing this in interviews for months now, but I recently came across an article by an MIT physicist named Max Tegmark, and he put it very succinctly. He said, we can portray our reality as either a three-dimensional place where stuff happens over time, as we oftentimes perceive it now, or as a four-dimensional place where nothing happens, such as in the block universe. And so we have this sense that everything is moving around us and we're moving through time. But in the context of block time, where every moment from the very beginning of the Big Bang to the very last moments where matter exists in our universe, all of those moments are already structured. They're already laid out. And we impose this sense of movement through those things by experiencing these events with our conscious minds. We impose this movement where really, if we understand it as four-dimensional block time, it's one giant entity that encompasses all of these moments, all of these events. And it's nearly impossible for us to picture that. We can picture three dimensions and then movement, but to picture four-dimensional block time where all of these things exist is much harder for us. But that is the way that physicists understand. It's the most conventional view of time among them. And so moving through this, it's easier to understand how we would do that. If we go from the future to the past, for instance, we're not disrupting anything. We're not changing anything. We're just interacting with the past. And in fact, those interactions already exist. They're already there before we even leave to do it. And there's self-consistency between those different periods of time. So any change, I'm using air quotes here, but any change that we enacted, any effect is probably a better way of saying it, of us visiting the past has already manifested itself before we even left. So there's this inherent self-consistency that exists between these different periods in block time.
Well, by the way, folks, Max Tegmark, whose work I am very familiar with, wrote a book called Our Mathematical Universe, which I loved. I've never had him on Dreamland because it's a pretty heavy duty math journey. And I suspect, and I'm not wrong, that most of my listeners are not heavy duty into math, but I love math. And, the book's wonderful. And basically what it proposes is that the universe is math. That underneath all of the particles and all of the energies that we see, there are mathematical constants and formulas that are the building block of the universe. And what was so extraordinary to me, and the reason I picked up the book, is that after Anne's near-death experience, she said one of the things that she had learned was that God is a mathematical formula. And I thought, that's weird. And then I found Max Tegmark's book some years later, and I realized it was a prescient comment because it's so close to true. Now, are you then saying that the universe is unchanging, that it's already all here from beginning to end? Or is that what you're saying?
Well, again, it's not me necessarily, but the conventional understanding of the universe is, and another physicist named Julian Barbour from England has been arguing these same things for a long time too, that change is really just an illusion. And I don't really like that word because it's more complex than that. It, in order to make sense, in order for a living organism to exist in this universe, we have to see these different states of being as something that's understandable to us. So you can understand how our consciousness and our awareness of our surroundings, there was selection for some sort of pattern, some sort of different, making sense of these different states of being. So this change, as we perceive it, is really just a way in which we live within this environment and the way we evolved within it and passed down our genes. And these things exist later. Our offspring exist after us. It takes us to make them. There's still cause and effect. There's different ways in which we can be. But it's almost, I guess a better way of saying it is we have to separate the physical notion of time and this four-dimensional block time from our conscious biological understanding of how we feel that we move and how we sense change in a more ethereal sense of the word.
You know, years ago, I mean, there were periods of time in the late 80s, two or three such periods, when I was able to ask the questions, ask the visitors direct questions, and there was almost eidetic memory. It was like they were on the other side of a television screen, the one on the cover of Communion in particular, who had a much bigger head, by the way, than I portrayed in the.
I wondered about that because it looked like a pretty small forehead, and that didn't seem like something.
That outraged Bud Hopkins too, but that was what I remembered at the time. Okay. Anyway, she was different. She was much smaller and had a bigger head. And I'm not sure whether the cover flattered her or offended her, but in any case, this is what I learned. I was always very interested in time, and at that point in my life, this movement, one of the big movement into the past, had already happened. It happened in March of 1983. So I was just alive with fascination about this. And I asked about time, and this was the answer. The answer was predicated on, it was about the way we perceive time, not necessarily what the universe is in an absolute sense. It wasn't a theory of the universe like the block universe. This was the answer. The future you see as water. The present is a compressor. The past is like ice.
Yeah.
And I
That's
said,
perfect.
Yeah, I said immediately, well, then we can't ever go back in time and change the past. And the response was, there are bubbles in the ice.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. And so anyway, here we are, folks. It might be that movement in time is possible. And if that's true, then who are these people? Free Dreamlanders, I hope you stay with us because you'll find out in a few minutes.
They are found deep in a dying jungle, 6 infants. They aren't apes. They aren't human either, not quite. So what are they? When they are spirited off to the United States, an incredible discovery is made. They are as smart as us, but not us, not human. The company that found them wants to buy and sell them as the most valuable animals on Earth, brilliant workers who need not be paid. Somebody has to stop this travesty, and that's where primatologist Beth Cook comes in. But can she stand up to the power and wealth that seeks to exploit them? Find out in Whitley Strieber's first standalone science fiction novel in 7 years. New. Get it on Amazon as an ebook or paperback.
As a subscriber of Dreamland for many years, it's been an incredible adventure and truly a Rosetta Stone for so many of the experiences that all of your listeners have had. Please join us. It's a fantastic ride. But I will say that certainly Dreamland does reflect something that I've always known, that man's mind mirrors a universe that mirrors man's mind. And no other place will you get this truth than on Dreamland. Come join us.
Some of the most thrilling, mind-opening interviews ever recorded are in the Dreamland Archive. Open your mind to Sir Lawrence Gardner's brilliant vision of the past. Listen to Russell Targ's phenomenal insights about ESP. Be inspired by Dr. Eben Alexander's stunning near-death experience. Listen to an actual recording from a plane as it was attacked by a gigantic flying disc. Be transported to a new level of inner grace with Whitley Strieber's Meditations. Enjoy The Communion, Transformation, Majestic, Secret School, and Superstorm audiobooks, and so much more. The UnknownCountry.com subscriber section. As little as 10 cents a day. Priceless.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Masters, Identified Flying Objects, a multidisciplinary scientific approach to the UFO phenomenon. His website is idflyobj.com, idflyobj.com. You can also find him on Twitter at MorphoTime and on Facebook at facebook.com/idflyobj. Now, let me ask you this. What might be possible? What might they be actually able to do if they are coming from the future? What would they be able to do here? Because after all, this, if it's a block universe, this has already happened in their in their experience.
And in our experience and their experience, absolutely. If another person, a physicist specifically, who I drew heavily from for the content of the book, was a physicist named Igor Novikov, and he points out specifically in his book, The River of Time, that the future can dictate events in the past. We're used to thinking about only causality happening with a past cause and a future effect. But the future can actually dictate events in the past because the future, present, and past are all one, as we just spoke about in the context of block time. But none of them are ahead of or behind the other in the presence of a time machine. So anything that they had done has already been done. Anything they will do in the future, in this time period and any that precedes where we are in the present, has already been done as well. So there's obviously still limitations to potentially how far back they can go. And I talk about that in the book, one of the reasons why they might only be able to travel 50, 60,000 years in the past, for instance. But within that framework of the laws of physics, which certainly still apply to them, we just don't have the deep understanding of it that they do in order to bend space-time back on itself to visit the past. But they would be able to do any number of things. And as an anthropologist and a paleoanthropologist specifically, I could learn so much more about our evolutionary past if I had access to this technology. We wouldn't just be left with the fossils and the teeth and the skeletal material to figure out where we came from, how we got to be the way we are, but we could study the real living beings at the time in which they existed, our distant ancestors, their language, their culture, the non-material aspects of their everyday lives, their life ways, as we call it. We could study their language and so many things that we just don't have available to us in doing archaeological digs. And many of the things that are described, I remember in your book specifically, you mentioned, and I quoted this at the beginning of one of my chapters, that you got the sense that you were being studied by a group of biologists or anthropologists, and that's what a lot of people describe, that it's similar to what a biomedical examination is. And that, again, is exactly what I would do as a biological anthropologist if I was able to pick people up. I'd take skin samples and hair samples and fecal samples, which may have given rise to that anal probe aspect of the phenomenon, and get as much data, genetic and soft tissue data, as I could, because we don't have access to that in modern times. Without time travel technology, we are just left with fragmented remains of the past.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think it would be technology? Because I'm not the only person I know, and certainly not the only person listening to you, who has experienced movement through time. And I have no time machine.
Mm-hmm.
It just, the event that I'm going to describe later in March of 1983 just happened on a street corner without warning. There was nothing going on. I mean, I hadn't had a close encounter experience. I had, but I had no memory of anything like that and didn't know I was involved in this stuff in any way. And it just suddenly happened.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, just recently, I was down in your neck of the woods and, I was meeting with a friend of mine in Malibu, and he described the same thing, just a stoppage of time, a disconnect from that normal progression through it. And many people who have experimented with psychedelic drugs, mushrooms, acid, every night when we go to sleep, it's the same thing. We fall asleep instantly. We feel like we woke up, and there's an eight-hour period in between that our brains just don't really account for. So again, I think it comes down to that separation between physical time and our perception of time, how we feel like we move through the block universe. And what you just described and what my friend in Malibu described and countless others is a separation of those two. And I've also experienced that, not, in a really mind-bending way or anything, but I've certainly experienced that disconnect between the physical world around me and how I perceive my movement through it in the context of this time that we impose on that physical world.
Now, there is something like physical movement through time, and also something more cognitive, more in the mind. And I have had both, I think. I think many people do. What would be the difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the things like what we were just discussing, where you have kind of missing moments or a perceived stoppage of time or even a backward, seemingly backward movement through time, those would all seem to be aspects of our consciousness, the way that we understand it. But to actually visit past periods of time, and especially very distant periods of time, there's quite a number of solutions to Einstein field equations, and he had 10 field equations that he published in association with his general theory of relativity back in 1915. And since the very beginning, as early as 1918, there had been solutions to these field equations which have shown that the rotation of a massive and or highly energetic sphere or ring or disk, in many cases, is able to create a warpage of space-time, a lens-Thurian effect, a gravitational frame-dragging is another term that's often used. And if that's the case, that would be somewhat different than what we're speaking about now, where it's a physical movement of that craft and its occupants, if you're able to build something. And these UFOs would seem to have those same qualities. We have these, we have this idiom in biology that form follows function, and it almost seems from the form of this object that it may have the function of backward time travel based on the research of Lenz and Thurene and Van Stockham and Gödel and Frank Tipler and a number of modern researchers who are still looking at how we would create closed time-like curves, how it would move physically into the past. And so how that would look physically, to get back to your question more specifically, is that locally, you're still moving forward in time. And your local frame of reference within that craft, you're still feeling everything move forward, you're still talking, your words are coming out in the same pattern as they always do, but you're moving backward in global space-time. That craft and you inside of it is moving into the global past, despite still feeling like you're going forward in time. So, and that's what a lot of people get confused about. They think that everything just starts running backwards, or that they would become a baby and then turn into sperm and egg again. And that's not the case. You're still moving forward in time locally, but you're traveling backward into the global past.
You know, a fourth event that I wasn't actually thinking about when I mentioned the ones I was going to talk about later, that I do want to bring up now. I had an experience in, I believe it was February of 1987 or 88. I don't have my books in front of me, and I don't remember the exact February. It was a February. And during this experience, it started in my cabin when I heard sound like a great horn, and just in the pre-dawn, and I knew it was the visitors. I had been asking them to come and meet with me, and I had been doing this all in my mind, and I didn't realize anybody was actually listening to me. Mm-hmm. And so I threw my robe on. It was a very cold morning, and rushed out into the woods behind our house, and they were pretty naked, so I could see down into a clearing beyond the woods. And in that clearing, there was something, a big, dark object that was clanking. And I knew from experience that when their machines were going very slow, they made a kind of clanking noise.
Yeah.
And when they were idling. And there were these dark figures down in there, too. And then I heard in my head a voice saying, "Come on, come on." And it was so scary that I got scared and went back to the house. Now, when I was in the house, there had been three cries above the woods. But when I was in the house, and this is the part I want to talk about now, something that I couldn't see came to the bedside. I knew it was there. I guess I could see it in some way, but not consciously. And it immediately, I found myself kind of gliding around in this room with all of these tall, sort of elegantly shaped sticks and things around. It was a very strange place until I realized it was my mother's bedroom from when I was a baby. And that
wow.
This strange object was her desk. And I realized they've plunged me back in my adult consciousness into the moment I first walked to communicate to me that I have taken a baby step. That now, did I actually go back in my consciousness into that past, Michael, or was that something that was drawn out of my memory, or can you tell?
Well, I this is one of few things that I have had personal experience with. I've never seen a UFO. I've never had any sort of close encounter. I'm very jealous, honestly, of you and countless others who have, because it's something I long for. I would love to be able to interact and especially ask questions, to ask about time and to ask about the future and all of these other things. But
it's something that can be learned, I'm pretty sure. Go ahead.
Others have told me that too, and I hope they're right, because I would certainly like to do that. But one thing that I do experience is everybody does, or at least a lot of people that are in tune with it, is deja vu, seeing something before it happens. And it's happened so much to me throughout my life in such an intense way where I'll dream things, and then sometimes that exact moment will happen within a couple weeks, or more often in a couple years, or sometimes decades. But I'd had dreams about my wife. I knew my kids before they were born because they were in so many of my dreams. And in the context of block time, as we were talking about earlier, that makes sense. If all of those moments from my future are already there, then it makes sense why I would eventually live those. But why would I have memories of those future events if it wasn't for this disconnect between our consciousness and time? And personally, I interpret this as consciousness being unbound from time, that it's stuck within our bodies. And as we age and as we grow older, we learn things. We have, in the same way that visitor explained to you, the water is the future. We compress it into this ice. We have memories of the past. That's the only real reason we have a sense of the past and not the future, is we compress these future memories into something that's more tangible in the form of synapses in our brain and the dendrites that organize these things. But if consciousness truly is separate from time, and the future, the present, the past are all really one, and we're just sort of experiencing them and putting them into memory form, then yeah, why couldn't beings that are more enlightened or more in connection with that, who can clearly manipulate our consciousness. They can speak to us through their minds, as you described, and countless others describe in the form of telepathy, but not just give words, give emotions, give feelings. And that's how it is for me, too, when I experience this, is that I know the smells. I remember the anxiety that I had felt at that moment, the way things that were happening in life at that time. So what happened to you, what you just described, very well could be pulling those things from your memory or putting you back into them as an adult, but connecting the two, essentially, in a way that certainly should be possible with a consciousness that's unbound from our physical beings. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's something we need to study more. We need to study consciousness, and we need to understand especially how it relates to not just past memories, but future memories as well.
Dreamland's wonderful theme music, chosen so many years ago by Ramona Bell, is the O of Pleasure from Ray Lynch's immortal album, Deep Breakfast. Free Dreamlanders, we'll be right back.
Whitley's new book, A New World, is getting great reviews. American cosmic author Diana Walsh-Pasulka says, "Enter this risky new world and leave empowered." New York Times reporter Leslie Keen says, "Riveting. I couldn't put it down." Amazon reviewers are calling it life-changing, mind-opening, the first real description of what contact is like and will be like. Don't miss A New World. As Professor Jeffrey Kripal says in his preface, this book is contact. Get A New World today. Available as a paperback, a hardcover, and an ebook wherever books are sold. And as an audiobook read by Whitley on audible.com.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Masters. His book, Identified Flying Objects, he postulates that UFOs are not necessarily extraterrestrial spacecraft at all, but rather essentially our own future, looking back on its past in a process of self-discovery. His website is IDFLYOBJ.com. Twitter feed, Morpho Time. Facebook page, Facebook.com/IDFLYOBJ. Identified flying objects. To quote from your book, from a statement made by Paul Davies, a physicist, in his own book about time, Einstein's Unfinished Revolution, human life revolves around the division of time into past, present, and future. People will not relinquish these categories just because physicists say they are discredited. This is perhaps what disturbs people most about block time, which is, of course, what we've been discussing. If the future is somehow already there, then we can have no hand in shaping it. In their professional lives, most physicists accept without question the concept of the timescape. But away from work, they act like everybody else, basing their thoughts and actions on the assumption of a moving present moment. Now, it's real hard to wrap your mind around the fact that that might not be the case, that there may in effect be no present.
Yeah.
And yeah. And that makes me ask you the question, does life therefore have no meaning?
Well, I think that would be an unfortunate outcome. But at the same time, I think those are separate questions. Meaning is more of an individual understanding of life and the environment. What we're talking about here is more of a broad-based understanding of the universe. So within that, we can find meaning. We can find meaning in essentially anything. But that question of the present is something that's confounded philosophers and physicists for such a long time. Obviously, Einstein struggled with it, and even at the beginning of the show when we were talking about the way Max Tegmark describes it, with we either have three dimensions in this movement or we have four dimensions and everything's there. So we could think of it as an omnipresent now or a moving now, essentially. But I don't know. I think once we start to get into issues of meaning and how we feel about it, it exists. It comes down to the question of free will, which is a very contentious issue. I've gotten a lot of hate mail from people who just really want to feel like free will is this true thing. And if it feels like that to you, then it exists. Just because the outcome may already be predetermined doesn't mean that we don't feel like we're making decisions. And that quote that you just read is one of my favorite ones that I cited from other people's work as well, because it really hammers at that question. What is the now? What is this thing that we feel? And I think about this all the time, especially when I'm really happy about something or really upset about something and having a lot of anxiety, because that now that I experience is no different than any other now. I've always felt like that present was the moment that was a now, but none of them are separate from each other. They're all there. They're all a part of this consciousness that I have that, like we talked about before the break, I don't think can just be broken into things that existed at one point in our lives, but rather is this constant thing that exists throughout our lifetime and is only... and that we only have a sense of moving through it or imposing change on things because it's bound to this meaty, fleshy thing that we carry around at the top of our bodies.
I think that there's another way of looking at it entirely, and that is that consciousness is outside of time, and therefore choice is real in the sense that there is a proliferation of possibilities always unfolding, that the many worlds theory is true. And consciousness, you can literally choose from this endless, endless array of realities,
absolutely,
the ones that you want to perceive. And this is how we make ourselves.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to mention it when we first started talking about block time is the other interpretation is the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, where every time we make a choice or every time there's an observation or something like visiting the past would be one of these two, where the universe essentially branches off in a different timeline. And that's absolutely another pretty common, not quite as conventional as block time, but it's definitely something that's believed to be the case by quite a number of physicists. And if that's the case, then yeah, there would be more of a possibility of free will and the way that we understand it, because there's all of these other possibilities and other timelines that exist in which we made those decisions.
Exactly. And we are, what the soul is doing is that it is building a perceptual model,
mm-hmm,
by choosing different experiences that have,
yeah,
are already there, already apples on the tree, so to speak.
Yeah, they're there for the picking, just which one you're picking. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And I don't try to claim that one's right and the other's wrong. I'm not in a position to do so by any means. I focused more on the block universe for the book because two reasons. One, it is more conventional. It's also a little easier to test. There's still a lot of problems with the many worlds interpretation with regard to being able to ever possibly be able to test if there's different dimensions. And it's still kind of a burgeoning field. So I essentially had to pick one or the other, and I went with block time. But I definitely don't discount quantum mechanics or the many worlds interpretation. And I think it deserves to be discussed in the context of all of these things. So I'm really glad you brought it up.
Well, I was going to bring up quantum mechanics next, actually. And what I want to talk about, folks, is a very well-documented reality. And I say it's not a principle of physics. It's a natural law, a reality of the world, which is known as quantum indeterminacy. Basically, until a particle is perceived or acted upon in some way by the universe, it is in an indeterminate state. It is nowhere and everywhere at the same time. We can prove this with a physics experiment that's been done many, many, many times. In fact, recently, light from literally the ends of the universe, from quasars, was captured at some telescopes in a group of telescopes in the Azores and tested to find out, run through this experiment to find out if it was true there too. And it is. It is literally true all over this universe as we can perceive it and detect it. So there is an element of indeterminacy here. And how does that reconcile here? What would the future beings be perceiving when they come back in time is really what I'm asking. Would it be as determined as it is to us? Or would it be something very, very different, much more like a waveform than a definite reality that you could perceive? Do you see where I'm going?
Yeah, I do. And I think one of the best examples is Schrodinger's cat, where you don't know if it's alive or dead until you open the box. And that observation creates a decoherence, and there's a solid state, but that didn't exist before you opened the box. It's that observation that drives it to be one state or the other. And again, I think it comes down to this block time versus many worlds interpretation. If we're talking about returning to the past in the context of block time, then yes, you would expect there to be a very physical, real moment with all of the people and the events that transpired at that moment that you enter into, that you come into that moment, and now you're a part of it. You had always been a part of it, but now you experience that as someone from the future. Or whether it's this Schrodinger's cat situation where there's this quantum superposition of states, and once we enter into that past, we alter it. We become the observation. We become the one that creates that decoherence. And in that instance, in the context of the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, at least, then you would have this split take place. And one thing that I think is somewhat paradoxical, there's not inherent paradoxes associated with traveling into a self-determined past in the context of block time. But if we are creating different timelines by going into the past, now there's issues as to whether or not you exist in this timeline. How do you get back to your timeline? How do you get back to a place where everything is how you left it? That exists in block time, but if you are picking a different apple from the same tree and creating a new timeline now, how do you get back to your own? And if there's all of these other possibilities and countless millions of other realities that stem from the same process, these observations that create new universes, how do you know which one to get to that even has humans? You might enter one where we never existed in that timeline, where we never came down from the trees as early hominins 6 million years ago, and now you're not studying humans at all, but some other form that existed in lieu of us. So I think there's more complications, there's more difficulties associated with backward time travel in the context of the many worlds, but it's a little more intuitive. It's maybe even more of an Occam's razor situation in the context of block time.
Free Dreamlanders, we will return. Keep listening.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff, Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like, and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A new world, unforgettable.
It's getting great reviews. Take a look on Amazon. It's available as a Kindle, as an ebook everywhere else, and as a paperback at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon, and as also as a hardcover on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, and as an audiobook read by me on Audible.com. We're talking to Dr. Mike Masters. His book, Identified Flying Objects. It is a new vision of the UFO and the alien as time traveler. His website is idflyobj.com, idflyobj.com. You can find him on Twitter at MorphoTime. You can find him on Facebook at facebook.com/idflyobj. Now, when we go into the third half hour, Dr. Masters, Mike, is going to stay with us, and I'm going to describe some experiences of movement through time, and he will comment on them. I think they should be absolutely fascinating, and I'm eager to do it because I've never had someone who knows as much about this in this particular way think about and talk to me about those experiences. So, but before we go there, I want to go in another direction entirely, and that is the direction of parallel universes. Those of you who have read my book, A New World, know that last summer on the Lakota Sioux Indian Reservation in Pine Ridge, I had what I regard as the most extraordinary experience of a life that has obviously been filled with them. Specifically, I saw, when I closed my eyes, a detailed parallel universe that I think of as a mirror universe because it was very close to this one, but not exactly the same. And I mean detailed. This went on for 3 days. And I could, during this period, I could lean over, close my eyes, look at the ground and see flowers and stems and stones and every detail, just as if I was looking through in a virtual reality headset. But I opened my eyes and it was all subtly different. This other world is a world that has been seen in the past, as I point out in my book, In a New World. And it's there somehow. Now, I'm not the only person who has seen it in the present, actually. There was another person, and this is where I'm getting to, who I mention in the book, who was a client of the head of abduction research from MUFON, Kathleen Marden, mentions in her book, Extraterrestrial Contact. She tells the story of Matt, who had, just let me make a long story short, he had extensive encounters, and his family was about to commit him to a mental institution when his mother witnessed with him, he owned a little small airport. At the end of their runway, they saw another world. And in this world, they could see things like a woolly mammoth and so forth. Now, the world I was looking at looked like I think our world would look if the Pleistocene had never stopped. In other words, if the Ice Age hadn't ended. It had dark skies, huge, wide rivers where there were just little creeks. But it also had, and this is the interesting part, a road. The road we were on was a modern graded highway. But the road in the other world was more like just a road that followed the contours of the earth, with the result that when I was in a car on the graded highway and had my eyes closed watching the other world. Oh God, this was so much fun. I wish everybody could have an experience like this. Anyway,
yeah, me too.
When the graded highway went straight, but the old road curved down along a hillside or something, it felt like the car was flying. Hmm. It was just extraordinary. Now, two people have this experience, apparently of a parallel universe where the Ice Age didn't end, or is it something else? What do you think?
Well, as someone who hasn't had an experience like that, it's harder for me to get a deeper sense of it or a more intuitive sense, but I think it could be either of those two things that we talked about already. It could be a parallel world. It could be a passage through time where in that moment that place existed for you, but at a much earlier point in time. I remember attending a talk at the International UFO Congress in September. And there was an astronomer there named Mark D'Antonio who had a very similar experience to what you just described. His was more proximate. It was right in front of him and seeing this dog and a different environment. And he interpreted it as a parallel world, the same way that you're saying, where these things weren't necessarily in that place at a different time, but it was just an entirely parallel universe that somehow he got a glimpse into that different world. And I think both of those are valid ways of understanding it. I mean, if you hadn't taken a couple hits of blotter acid right before that, and there's no reason to be visioning things or seeing things that aren't there, then, yeah, how do you interpret that? How do you understand it?
I don't take drugs.
A valid one.
I have been told by doctors who have examined my brain that there are aspects of my brain that strongly suggest that I should not take drugs. And, in fact, the one time I was involved with drugs was I walked into a room at a party where there were a lot of people smoking grass. This was back in the 80s in New York. And I was high for a week. I was just in the room for a couple minutes, and the smoke was so heavy I left. But
yeah.
I was seeing myself pass in the street for a week, and then the next weekend we went to another much different party. And I complimented the hostess on the goldfish in her lamp stands and said, "We're going home." And she said, "Whitley, you are still high from walking into that room. There were no goldfish in her lampstands."
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So, well, obviously, that's not for me. But now,
No. But I wasn't saying that that's the only way to experience those things. But for those of us who haven't had an experience like that, who have maybe participated in some parties with grass or mushrooms or whatever, it makes it a little easier to wrap your head around that, at least because you have some experience with envisioning things. But
right.
It's still different. It's still a drug-induced thing. However, with that said, maybe that does give you a glimpse into something that exists beyond this physical reality, where if we have this timeless consciousness, like we talked about earlier in the show, it might give us a brief glimpse into that when we separate our consciousness from our physical form to some extent. So I don't say drugs is something that is something that would impair, but rather maybe something that would help for those of us who haven't had those experiences,
help us
understand it in some terms.
I know a lot of people in the ayahuasca community who are convinced that they enter this world when they do ayahuasca, and that may be the case.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to go on to another subject. This is a huge, complex thing, this encounter phenomenon. It's much more, as my listeners know, than aliens and UFOs, flying saucers, etc. One of the things that we haven't touched on is the idea of hybrids. I have had these people in my life, and they were totally physical, but also very strange and very disturbed. Among other things, they could read and control minds. They could not do that to my mind, or didn't, but I saw them do it to other people any number of times.
Mm-hmm.
What were they, do you think, in the context of your theories?
Well, one thing that I like to point out about hybrids is that in the context of the way in which organisms reproduce, a hybrid, if it is in fact real, if it is the combination of these more alien forms and modern human forms, then that is very good evidence that they are in fact human. Because based on the biological species concept, in order for two organisms to reproduce, they have to be the same species. And the classic example is the donkey and the horse. It can make a mule, but that mule is infertile. It's not a viable species. It's not able to reproduce itself. So if hybridization does exist, and people believe that that exists, or people that feel they are hybrids themselves, and I've met many people who not only feel that they are the product of hybridization, but who have these same abilities, who have telepathic abilities, who have precognitive abilities. And that would kind of make sense. If we're talking about future humans with more complex, more evolved brains, and if this is an aspect of the brain at some point in our distant future, if that is a genetic heritable characteristic that they're passing down to offspring at a time before it existed, you would expect to get some aspects of that precognitive telepathic ability. So I personally, this is just my belief. I don't have any way of knowing if this is true or not, but from meeting these people and talking to them, I truly believe that not necessarily their parents, in many cases grandparents, may have been part of some sort of hybridization program going on with, again, what I believe to be our future human descendants. Because if we're talking about organisms that evolved on a different planet, they're not likely to evolve to look anything like us, and they most certainly would not be able to reproduce with us.
Then we are a consciousness creating itself.
And, quite possibly.
And yet already created. When, in other words, we're discovering ourselves, and that's what this sense of free will would be about. Because I feel it strongly. I feel like I have free will.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And, God knows, my brother and I played so many practical jokes on our dad. I can't believe that was all planned, pre-planned by the universe, and I'm sure Dad wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
We're coming to the end of the first hour, and folks, in the next hour, I'm going to describe some experiences of movement through time. I don't think I've talked about them much at all on the show. I may have. And Mike will respond to those. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun doing that. And given, folks, that many of you will not be hearing this because you're not subscribers, that's a mistake. You should subscribe to unknowncountry.com. And you know that you can come and see both me and Mike Masters and many others this summer, May 29th through June the 1st, at the Renaissance Indian Wells Resort and Spa at Contact in the Desert. Just go to contactinthedesert.com, sign up, and you can come out and you can see us. And what an incredible lineup it is this year.
Yeah,
really remarkable.
Lots of great speakers. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So a lot of them have been on Dreamland, a lot of them. Diana Walsh-Pasulka, Deep Prasad, the scientist who was on our Christmas show, who had one morning last November looked up and had the little gray beings walking around in his office. What an experience.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael, now when we're off the air, I'm going to give you my listeners know all about this exercise, the sensing exercise. I talk about it all the time. I describe it in A New World, and I describe it in Afterlife Revolution. It is a method of making yourself visible in other levels of reality that does work. And I'm going to describe it to you and what to do with that great big mind of yours when you are doing the exercise, so that you can enable whatever's out there to come into awareness of your interest. And we'll do that off the air, because and listeners, if you don't know how to do it and would like more information, just write me at whitley@streber.com or get The New World. It's simple enough. Dr. Masters, Dr. Michael P. Masters, his new book, Identified Flying Objects, his website, idflyobj.com. Michael, we are going to go straight on for the subscribers. Free Dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by unknowncountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.